if I'm going to leave Cameroon, is to go to the US. So when the opportunity came, I went and I applied for my visa and I came. I landed at LAX and an immigration officer arrested me because he said, and he looked at me straight in my eyes. He was a big guy, tall. He had to, you know, lay on the table to be eye to eye level with me. And I'm tall, I'm 5'7". So he had to come down. So just to tell you how big he was, to be eye level with me. And he said, you know what I think? I think you came here to work as a prostitute. So you are going back to Cameroon.
What? Mm-hmm. My guest this week is Christelle Biga. Christelle is a woman of incredible strength who has really used her experiences to inspire others. She was born and raised in Cameroon, and she journeyed across continents in pursuit of the American dream. But really what awaited her was not the land of opportunities that she had envisioned for herself, but really a series of adversities that tested her faith, her strength, and her resolve. In this conversation, Christelle shares her deeply personal and inspiring journey from her early life in Cameroon, where she was known as the strong one, always offering a shoulder for others to lean on, to her life-altering experiences when she got to the United States. She opens up about the wrongful accusation of intending to work as a prostitute upon her arrival in the United States, which was a baseless charge that led to her detention and a grueling legal battle to clear her name. While this experience was undoubtedly a dark chapter in her life, it also served as an impetus for her to become an advocate for justice, resilience, and the human spirit. And she uses her story to inspire others today, reminding them that they're stronger than they think and that every challenge is an opportunity to discover our true strength. Throughout our conversation, Christelle offers a fresh perspective on the importance of acknowledging our emotions and the need to live for ourselves. She highlights the heavy weight of societal expectations and the responsibility that comes with being seen as the strong one. Her insights serve as a powerful reminder of the importance of emotional recognition, even for those that are perceived as strong. This episode is not just about the trials that Christelle faced, but really about the triumph of the human spirit in the face of adversity. It's about resilience and strength and the innate desire to impact others positively. It's really a testament to how sometimes life's biggest challenges can lead to our greatest transformations. Before I jump into this episode, I'd like to thank my friend Mickey for sponsoring 2 episodes every month on the Patreon. I am so grateful for your support and your cheerleading. And I also want to thank all the other Patreon supporters. If you are interested in supporting the show directly, head to patreon.com/thelifeshiftpodcast, and you can see all the different tiers and the bonus episodes and the t-shirt giveaway and all the other things that we do over there. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Christelle Biga. I'm Matt Gilhooly, and this is The Life Shift, candid conversations about the pivotal moments that have changed lives forever. Hello, my friends. Welcome to the Life Shift podcast. I am here with Christelle. Hello, Christelle.
Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
I am good. We had the pleasure of interacting probably, what, like a couple months ago now, right?
Yes.
We met up on a little podcaster meetup, and I started that with my friend Hector just because I felt very isolated as a podcast host. You know, sometimes we do most of the work except for the interview alone, right? And so we created this place where people in the podcasting industry could come together and just talk and learn from each other and take away what we want. And you're a part of the podcasting industry as well. And so it was a pleasure to meet you then. And now we get to have a deeper conversation here.
Yes, it was interesting for me to be a part of it, being kind of a middle. So it was interesting to hear the hosts actually, you know, share their journey because I deal more with the guests. And at some point I was a host, but I never really had the type of conversations that, you know, we had during that meeting. And it was really interesting. And that made me think differently about how I interact with hosts, even when, you know, I work for my clients, you know, trying to get them booked. I come from a different place. So yeah, that was a good experience.
After that conversation, I want to feel like within a few days, you reached out to me separately and you were like, hey, maybe I could come on your show and share a little bit about my story, because you certainly have a moment or a period of moments in time that really changed the direction of your life and the way you thought about things. So thank you for just wanting to be a part of this. It's such an honor to have people like you want to actually share your personal story too, because this one is kind of like a hard one, but also one that could inspire others. So thank you for just wanting to do it.
Yeah, thank you. And really, it's important. It's part of, you know, understanding each show. Because yes, my specialty is to get my clients on top tier shows, but it's not just about the numbers. You really have to know that being on that show will be a service for the audience. And your show is not a show where I will pitch, you know, some of my clients to, because I know that's not, they don't have that type of defining moments in their lives. And when I listened to your show, I was interested because I have shared my story so many times. We were talking about it before the recording. I have shared it a few times already. But I know the impact that it has had on people's lives. That's why it's always an honor for me to be able to share that. And hopefully just have one person feel different, feel encouraged, feel motivated to not give up and on themselves, to not let life defeat them. Because that's not the purpose of challenges. The purpose of challenges is to help us see how strong we truly are. And I just hope with my story, sometimes I will remind people that, hey, you are stronger than you give yourself credit. You are, because look at me, right? I wasn't that brave before I had to be brave.
Maybe you can kind of take us back and paint the picture of what your life was like leading up to this moment, because it really was something that I think on the surface, so many of us would be like, I don't think I could handle that, or I don't think I could exist beyond that. So, you know, kind of paint the picture of what your life was like leading up to this moment, and then we'll kind of divulge what we're hinting at right now.
Yes, really, before that moment, I had a big dream. I had a big vision for my life, for humanity, because I was really coming from a place of trying to do something that will help as many people as possible. To be honest, I wasn't sure what that was. So just for the listeners who don't know the backstory and that can hear my accent, at least my accent, I'm originally from Cameroon, and that's in Africa if you miss your geography lessons. I'm kidding. But yes, I'm originally from Cameroon. So how was my life before? Well, growing up in Cameroon was interesting. Because sometimes people ask me, what's the difference between Cameroon and LA? I'm like, people, right? That's the difference. But yeah, so growing up in Cameroon, I remember when I was a little girl, sometimes meet strangers on the street and wonder, is this person happy? That was kind of curious for a little girl to worry about adults, because usually it's the other way around. Adults worry about kids. But I was that child that would look at adults and simply have that heavy question in my mind. And it will be really heavy in my heart. Sometimes my brain will have to kick in and remind me, listen, Christelle, you don't even know them. Why do you care? But that was just something that, you know, has been with me, you know, as I was growing up, it was still there. And when I was in my late teens, I'm the generation of Rihanna. We're probably the same age, I don't know. So when she was big, I saw the impact, you know, in our generation. If time should change her hair color, we will have to do the same, you know. So I was seeing all those things. And of course, Oprah, of course, she's always big influence anyway. And I would go back, you know, I would go to bed at night and just look at, especially those two. I don't know. I have to think about why them specifically, but those two, I would go to bed thinking, I wish I had that level of influence that I will be able to actually help people improve the quality of their lives and be happy.
That's so interesting too, because I think a lot of teenagers that I grew up around would probably be like, I wish I had their money. Whereas you were thinking, I wish I had the level of influence that these people have, because then you could finally change the lives of others. Whereas I think a lot of the selfish teenagers that I knew were all about the money that those two probably still have.
And I will not blame them, because they were not that little girl wondering about people being happy, right? We are just on different path in life. And I guess that was part of my path to just serve people, just make sure people are happy, even though it wasn't really my responsibility, but it was just in my heart.
Did that approach, did you feel different from other students or other classmates or people that were your age? When they would talk about things, did you feel like, oh, well, I don't even care about that stuff. I care more about the human and the human experience. Did that make you feel different than other people?
I've always felt different.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I felt that I was too mature because I was just not into all the things that people my age were, and that were making them do all kinds of things. I wasn't that teenager that would want to do what everyone else does. No. I will do exactly what I want to do. And yes, to answer your question, I was definitely different for sure. I had things that were too deep, and that made me the friend that everyone knew that they could count on. They will know my shoulders are strong enough so they can cry on it, because yes, I was different. So, and they could see it, and they knew, okay, when it's not about just messing around, we know where to go. We know who to talk to. We know her brain works differently, you know, she will be there. So yeah, I was definitely a special team.
That's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, it is. It was heavy for sure. Because yeah, when you are that person that everyone knows they can count on, they see and they believe that you are so strong that they don't expect you to ever need a shoulder as well, which is painful, because sometimes you want a shoulder too. Sometimes you want to cry and everybody was like, no way, you're not crying, you're too strong for that, you know. So yeah, it's heavy.
It's a lot of responsibility. I kind of felt the same way when my mom died. As when I was a kid, I felt that everyone expected me to be happy, so I took on that responsibility of like, look, I'm okay, I'm not broken and worried and sad and all these things, I'm fine. And so I can kind of, in a similar, maybe it's not the same, but in a way, I felt a heavy responsibility that people expected me to feel a certain way. So I bet a lot of people expected you to just be strong all the time when mm-hmm. you're really just a young person going through all the emotions, but really caring deeply, which can be really heavy at a lot of times, you know, especially if people are crying on your shoulder all the time. I think that can be overwhelming, because I'm imagining you have a high level of empathy and absorb some of that, or maybe I'm assuming that.
Yeah, definitely. And you just to come back to what you shared, you feel that responsibility to live up to the expectations of others, and it gets really heavy. And fun fact, I'm the last born of my family, but even my elder brothers and sisters felt the same way. They knew I was the strong one to come to when they needed, and it was interesting because whenever they will come to me with a problem, I will feel the responsibility to come up with a solution and do what needs to be done. And it's not sustainable, right? Yes, it's good to know that for people around you to know they can count on you, but it's really healthy when it's also you know that it's okay for you to be human, because it's not okay for people or even yourself to think people expect from you to be one way all the time. Because even the happiest person in the world, it's okay to cry sometimes. Even the strongest person in the world sometimes needs a shoulder too. So finding that balance when you are still young is kind of challenging, because it takes time for you. And it took me a lot of personal development work, working with coaches, looking at myself and dealing with my emotions to realize that all of that was not part of who I was supposed to be. Yes, I'm a strong person, but it doesn't mean that I don't need a shoulder. It doesn't mean that I don't want someone to care for me the same way I care for other people. So finding that is really, and that's why sometimes people live their lives for others, because of those expectations and those responsibilities that we carry on through our lives. And sometimes it starts from a very young age and we just live our lives for others. So it's really being a human is a full-time job, okay?
No, it's true. And I mean, you took it on early and it brought you through these teenage years where you're going to bed thinking of how you could be as influential as people like Oprah and Rihanna, not as famous or rich or just the ability to impact people. Where did that, what transpired from that, like in your life?
And it's good that you're mentioning about influence, because what I was thinking about Oprah was how sometimes she would say, oh, I ate to that restaurant, and all of a sudden everybody has to go eat there. Those are little things that I would think, if I had that level of influence, I would not just make people go eat at a new restaurant. I would actually do something that would improve the quality of their lives. And interestingly, I had no clue what I was going to do to make it happen. I had no idea. I just wanted to be able to do something, right? So eventually, when I became a young adult, you know, I was living my life in Cameroon, following my dreams. I was hosting some TV, doing some radio. And, you know, so, but eventually I hit a glass ceiling in my life. I just felt like what I wanted to do was limited. But even though I would, you know, do some TV show, I would be like, it's not going to be able to have the level of impact that I want to have. It's always going to be limited, right? This is Cameroon. How many people even know where Cameroon is? But then if I go to the place where they say anyone can become anything, where is that? The United States. So, okay, I bought into the American dream. Don't blame me. I bought into that anyone can become anything.
You aren't
anything.
The only one. Lots of people have.
Yeah. So I decided to come to the United States. Could barely speak English at the time. Had no family or friends here. Made zero sense. Okay. So if you have any entrepreneur in your audience, they know what it is to take a leap, right? Not knowing what is on the other side and just trusting that it's the next move. So that's where I was. I just knew, okay, if I'm going to leave Cameroon, it's to go to the US. So when the opportunity came, I went and I applied for my visa and I came. I landed at LAX and an immigration officer arrested me because he said, and he looked at me straight in my eyes. He was a big guy, tall. He had to, you know, lay on the table to be eye to eye level with me. And I'm tall. I'm 5'7". So he had to come down. So just to tell you how big he was to be eye level with me. And he said, you know what I think? I think you came here to work as a prostitute. So you are going back to Cameroon.
What? Mm-hmm. Did he have any kind of like, it was just like, oh, I think that you're here to become a prostitute. No like reasoning, no. Did he give you any kind of anything?
I wish I had an explanation. Because at that moment, to be honest, I thought maybe it's a prank. I was like, okay, this is LA, so maybe it has something to do with the movie. Because, you know, he was searching, he was going through my luggages, asking me where I came here. And I was trying to answer, as, you know, the best I could. Because, again, I could barely speak English. And even when he said that, I was I was in shock.
As anyone would be. I think anyone would be like, what?
Yeah,
what
so I wasn't sure where that was coming from. So I tried to ask, like, did he see something in my luggage? I mean, everything looks normal over there. He said, well, yeah, your clothes look normal, everything else. But, you know, even prostitutes wear normal clothes. And I said, I know. He said, see, how do you know? God. I knew it. You're a prostitute. I said to myself, so I guess whatever I say here just is evidence that I'm a prostitute, I guess.
So, yeah, you're just confirming his
yeah,
whatever he believes, which it seems like he can't accuse anyone of that without any kind of proof, yeah. But I guess
he didn't
could.
Have to prove anything. I had to prove that he was wrong. It was on me to prove that. So when I was sent to a detention center, that's what the game. I had to prove to a judge that, nope, I am not coming here to work as a prostitute. So for him to say, okay, I believe you, so you can stay. Or I don't believe you, so you go back. Okay? It was on me to prove that.
That doesn't sound like the American dream at all.
Oh, Lord. That was more like a nightmare.
You get off this plane. I'm assuming you're walking through customs, and that's where this all goes down. You're giving your paperwork to the person and then they're like, no, you're a prostitute.
Yeah. So when you come in,
I'm
you have
to picture
to,
this.
Yeah. Yeah. I know because I worked at LAX after that. So that's another interesting part. Yes.
PTSD.
So when you come in, when you are not an American, you have to, there are forms that you fill out, you know. So you go first to first immigration officer who reviews the form that you filled out, and, you know, double check the info and ask you a few questions about your stay. And really, when I was coming, I knew that that interview was part of the process. So, and I knew that if he doesn't like my answers, he can just say, nope, we are not admitted in the country. So I passed that interview. So I did that. Okay. That one was really cool. Actually, it was like even helping me fill out, change the hotel reservation and make sure I got the address right and everything. And he was like, okay, welcome to America. So I was happy. It was so okay. Listen, and it was December 31st. I was like, I'm celebrating the new year and everything. I'm taking my selfies. And I'm walking out trying, you know, go now to pick up my bags to clear customs. That's where now the other guy is there, right? So that's where now he's there to bring your bags. He's searching my bags and she's chatting like nothing. And yeah, next thing you know, I'm a prostitute.
All of a sudden, yeah. And it's like all these dreams, I can imagine this like wide-eyed, like I'm ready to go. These are my new dreams. Shattered in like one random nothing to back it person that comes up to you and tells you that, and then you get, and then you can't even like talk your way out of it, right? Because then you end up going to some kind of detention center of some sort to prove that you're not a prostitute. How does one prove that they're not a prostitute?
Good
like
question.
I feel like that's really hard,
but again, that's not even what he put in my file. And I found out in court probably 8 months in the detention center that he put
eight
in
months.
Five. Yeah. I've spent 9 months there in total. So, yeah. So when I was arrested there, the process, because they sent me to a detention center because it was now an immigration thing. Either I get deported or I'm allowed to stay. So that's an immigration decision to be made. So I had to go in front of an immigration judge. So they put me in a detention center, and the detention center is basically where anyone crossing the border or entering the country, whatever, illegally, or anyone even inside the country that is undocumented, maybe gets arrested, they put them in a detention center before a judge makes a decision if they get deported or not. So I ended up there, even though I had no place to be there. I was here legally. I had my visa. Everything looked good on paper. And really, that's something I like to usually stop and just help people see that, you know, this is not a story that maybe everybody, maybe in your audience will have, but you can relate in a way that sometimes you have plans and everything looks good on paper until life happens. Right? You think, okay, I've done everything I needed to do. That's what I thought. I thought I got my visa, so I did everything right. So everything should be fine. How many times we say everything should be fine? I made sure that that's why sometimes I tell people, don't wait until you have all your ducks in a row, because it doesn't matter. Life can still happen. Just take the first step. Don't sit there and wait to have everything perfect on paper, because real life is a different story. So that I was there in the detention center and I was also confused. I'm grateful for all the people that I met there, because they knew when they were coming that they would have to pass through that process. So mentally, they were in a different place. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have anything.
It wasn't
to do
on
there.
Your list.
It wasn't even part of the regular process. No one with a visa was there. I was the only one there with a visa, okay? Everyone else crossed the border or whatever happened, but I was the only one there that had no place there, okay? So it was difficult. And thanks to their support, you know, they were encouraging and helped me, you know, when my spirit was really, really low. It was good to have them just try to keep me going sometimes. And why 9 months? Sometimes people ask me that question, right? Yeah. Does it take 9 months for you to prove that you're not a prostitute? Well, the way it works is that you have one court date a month. So you just go in front of the judge one time in a month. And each time you go there, first question the judge asks you is, do you have a lawyer? No, I don't have a lawyer. Well, okay, go get a lawyer. That's it.
And you can't come back for a month.
Yeah. So next thing you know, you are there 6 months, 7 months, 8 months. So on the 8th month, finally, one day the judge said, okay, let's read what's in your file, why you're here. And he's reading all the things. So you came to the country legally, whatever. And I'm sitting there because I have a translator and I'm not sure if to translate. But the good thing, even though I couldn't speak English, I could understand it because in Cameroon, it's like in Canada. We have one side that speaks French, one side that speaks English. So I was from the French side, but we were taught English in school. So I could understand, but I just couldn't speak because I was from the French side. After the classroom, you can't really practice. So yeah, you don't use it. And at some point he said, you came here with a fake visa. And I was like, hold up, what's happening? Wait, what? What did I just hear? Right. So I had to be like, okay, Your Honor, I'm sorry. What? So I told my translator, no, tell him my visa is anything but not valid, okay? So he said, so you're telling me your visa is valid because the immigration officer at the airport said, I said, I don't care what he said. He said a lot of things already at this point.
Right.
So, yeah. But my visa is valid. So can we call the consulate in Cameroon and ask them if they deliver the visa? I said, please do. Please. So he
said,
okay.
Should have called them 8 months ago.
Yeah. So he said, because I never even started my case. Every time it was come back next month, go get a lawyer. So they contact them, say, okay, come back in 2 weeks. That was the quickest ever I've been in court between 2 weeks. But usually it's 1 month. So he said, okay, come back in 2 weeks. We'll have the information. So went back 2 months in, said, okay, we verified. You're right. Your visa is valid. But now you have been here for 8 months already. It's kind of, we kind of feel bad. So we don't know what you want to do. Maybe because, I can't release you now. You really have nothing to do here. But I just feel bad because you have already spent 9 months here, kind of wasted almost all your visa here. So how about we can do that, right? I can release you now. Or you can finish your case, and if you win, you have a permanent status. How about that? I said, okay, whatever. I guess I'm already here for 8 months. Let's see. 1 month is not going to kill me at this point.
So they were like, well, if you stay one more month and finish your case out, you can have a permanent status here in the United States.
If I win my case. If you win. Yes.
That seems very... Is that like protocol? Is that something that it feels like they just made this up, or is this something that
I don't think it was protocol for someone with a visa to end up there anyway. So I don't know what the protocol was at that point. I don't know.
But you figured, okay, I've been here 8 months, may as well follow through with my case.
Yeah.
I have a case that seems like I've done all the things correctly. Mm-hmm. So did you feel that you, even though this dream country has proved you wrong in every aspect so far, you still felt like maybe they'll do right if I follow through?
I didn't trust them. I mean, I had no expectation for them because even in a detention center, the other detainees, as I said, they were kind of brief telling me how things go. They told me no one wins their case in there. They told me the options that you either get released on parole or you get the judge gives you a bond that if pay, you get released and continue your case outside. But no one actually goes to court and win. So I had no expectation, but I was just in a place where I had no options also. That's what I was saying at the beginning of our conversation, that sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit. That's why challenges come to give us a chance to see what we are truly capable of. So the first option was getting released on parole, which my parole got denied. And it got denied, even though, again, I checked all the boxes, because of the fact that he said my visa was invalid. So I was a flight risk. That's why they denied my parole. And at that time, I didn't even know because they didn't tell me. I found out 8 months in when they finally told me what it was in my file. Because the whole time, every time something is denied, I'm just confused. What's happening? Why? I did everything you asked me. So why am I not getting released? No one is telling you anything. So that was the first option that just went through the window. Next option was a bond. I go to court. That was probably seven. No, after the judge said, okay, now you can, you know, finish your case. The next court was a bond hearing. So where they can just give me a bond, and if I pay, okay, I go finish my case outside, whatever. They asked me for $20,000.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, but I don't have anyone here. Right. Where am I supposed to come up with $20,000 and pay you? Okay. So second option.
Especially after sitting in here for 8 months.
For 8 months, I'm sure I worked that much money. Okay. I have it somewhere in my bank account. So that option also not available anymore for me. So I had one option left other than getting deported. I had to win. That was the only way out at that point, right?
And you didn't want, you still had, like, it's just, you know, fascinating to me because I feel like there's, I don't know if I would have the fight. Like, I would be just like, send me back home, I think. I don't know, you know? And yes. It's so amazing to hear people like you that, like, still have some kind of light, still have some kind of fight in you when everyone is just knocking down every card that you place back up in the proper order, in the things, in the ways that they wanted you to do it. And you're still like, well, I want to stay, so I'm going to fight.
I wish it was that easy and fun, but I wasn't feeling that, it wasn't that fun, right? But it's really something that comes from when you have a deep and big vision. It's bigger than you. It's bigger than what feels good or feels comfortable at that point. Because I promise you, it wasn't easy for me every day to wake up and make the decision to stay in that jail, okay? Because I could have signed a deportation paper at any moment, as you say, and just say, you know what, forget it. Just send me back.
Did any part of you think that?
Definitely. Okay. It wasn't something that wasn't crossing my mind. It was crossing my mind. And that's why I love sharing this story, because I know not everybody will have to face that in a foreign country. I wish you never do. But in your everyday life, you are faced with difficult decisions. And the option to give up is always around the corner. And you sometimes even have people reminding you of that option. Yeah, they are reminding you that you don't have to go through this. You can just, you know, maybe you started a business and things are not going exactly the way you thought it would. People are like, just go get a job. Why are you putting yourself through this, right? Maybe it's a relationship. Why don't you leave this, you know, whole marriage thing, right? You always have people around you reminding you that you have the option to give up. And I had that thought in my mind that why go through all of this? Why not just go back to Cameroon? Why you allow people to wake you up at 5 a.m. and count you to just make sure you didn't run away in the night like a criminal? Why do you sometimes have people calling you by a bank number, not your name, number 42, and you have to know it's you? Why do you go through all this wearing an ugly uniform?
Yeah, why?
Why?
Why? That's my question too. Like it's, you know, you make the comparisons to people, you know, running a business and quitting. And this is your life, though. This is like, it must feel so dehumanizing in a way, all these things that you're mentioning. And it's just like, for me, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't think I could do it. And good on you for finding the fortitude, finding the strength within yourself, knowing, thinking back, and I don't know if you thought of Oprah and Rihanna and the influence and that little girl that wanted to see like happiness in other people. Was that something that was driving you to kind of be like, shh, put this to the side. Don't quit yet. We can make it through this.
Yes, because I was closer. As hard as it was, as challenging as it was, as painful as it was, I was closer being in that detention center than going back to Cameroon. So it was me just keeping the eyes on the prize, knowing why I'm here in the first place. Yeah, if I just came here to, you know, just chill, see around or whatever, I would be like, forget it. Right. I don't have to go through this.
But your life in Cameroon was not bad per se,
it wasn't.
Right? You just felt like you had, you had hit the level at which you could no longer really get to the level that you wanted to, or you felt the drive to, or the right.
Exactly.
So it wasn't like you would have been going back to something bad, because you wouldn't have. You would have been going back to something fine.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why having a strong vision is such a big driver. And that's why they even sometimes encourage people in business to have a strong why. Because I promise you, life will happen. Challenges will arise. But what will keep you going, what will keep you on track is your why. If it's strong enough, if it's deep enough, you will stay there. You will stay the course. You will do whatever it takes to see it through. And that's where I was, right? It was tough, but my vision was big enough.
And it was pulling you towards working your way to, I'm assuming, or maybe I shouldn't assume, did you win your case?
Yes, I did.
Good.
I did. That was another defining moment for me, because from the moment I did something that was, you know, impossible, because they told me it had never happened. No one does it. It doesn't. Even people who have a lawyer don't. And I had no lawyer. So I had zero chance. Okay. Minus 100. Okay. If you wish. But I won there and I won. So that turned on something in my brain, or turned off something in my brain, that now when I hear that something is impossible, it's like, you watch me. And you know what's interesting? When I did, I remember when I came back to court all happy, from court all happy, and say I won, everybody in the, you know, the room were like, oh, forget it. She's messing with us. I'm like, no, seriously. So one of them took the paperwork and read it, like, and told everyone else, she's right, she won. And everybody started shouting. But it was such incredible that not only in my brain something turned off, but even in their brains something did, because after that people started going to court and winning.
You showed them there's hope.
And that's why I was telling you earlier, yes, as many times as I share this story, I can't stop sharing it, because I know how many people are sitting sometimes in places where they don't give it a shot, they don't try, because they told them it's impossible, because the numbers prove that, because the research show that, because the stats say this, so they don't even give it a shot because they think there is no point. But hearing this, I hope, is an encouragement for you to give it a shot, because until someone does it, it will always remain called impossible. But maybe you will be the first person, maybe the first person in your industry, maybe the first person in your life or in your family, in your cycle, that will make it possible for you and for others.
Yeah, so you winning that case, not only did it give you your one step closer to this dream, but it almost at the same time fulfilled some of your dream, because you unlocked possibility for the people that you cared about, that you were stuck in a situation with, that you never should have been part of it. You know, that you gave them this, you lit their hope. You gave them like, oh, I could possibly do this too. I could be like her and do what she did. So it's like, it's in a weird roundabout way, some of your dream of being influential and changing people, you did it.
I never thought about it until you're saying it right now. And it's so true, because sometimes when we have a desire or a dream in our heart, I love to think that it doesn't come from us. That's why it's so critical to make sure that the goals you set up in your life or the dreams that you have are really yours. You are not going after them because you saw other people do it. When they are really yours, they are coming from somewhere bigger than yourself. And it's not only for you. Your dreams are not only for you, and they are really for other people as well. And what you mentioned right now is so powerful, because yes, I had that dream. And even though I didn't know how I was going to make it happen, the universe started showing me how it's done. You do it and you show the way to others. That's one way. And that's why sharing this story, that's what I was telling you, I love doing that, because maybe me sharing my story will empower somebody listening to share their story as well. So that's what sometimes all it takes. You go first and you see the impact. Sometimes we don't even changing the world is not always, you know, something massive, right? When you say, I'm going to change the world.
You change their world, though.
Exactly. That's why I say it doesn't have to be something big, because, again, we don't give ourselves enough credit. We think it's for other people. Yeah, Tony Robbins can change people's lives, but who am I? No, I promise you, there is something about you that right now can change someone's life, right? So it's really, really important.
You did in that circumstance, whether they won or not after the fact, there was a new sense of hope. There was like, it was no longer impossible in their brains. And therefore, I think you changed their world, right? That you changed something in their perspective. Now that when they look at other hard things that they might encounter, they're like, well, she did it. You know, she could, maybe I can do it. You know, and it's so like, when I hear people's stories like these, it's like, what a terrible situation to get into. And trying to find the silver lining is kind of like insulting in a way, right? It feels like, oh, she should never have, you never should have gone through that. But because you did, it weirdly helped you accomplish some of that 4-year-old's goal, you know, like walking around and seeing people happy. Are they happy? It's a weird thing to think about, and terrible that you had to go through it. But also at the same time, like, you helped people.
No, I love the silver lining in that. And sometimes people find it strange that I say I'm grateful for that time of my life.
I get it.
Yes, I am grateful. I get grateful.
It. It's hard to say though, right? Like, yes. It's like, oh, I'm grateful for the nine. You're not grateful that you were there for nine months.
No, no. Listen, if they had asked me, okay, right. We're about to deliver your visa, but this is it. Sit down and take notes. This is what's going to happen. You're going to land at LAX and this is what's going to... I'll be like, no, thanks, bye.
Exactly.
Yeah. I would say there's no way I can survive one day in jail. Because I just want you to remember what I said at the beginning. We don't give ourselves enough credit. We don't know how strong we truly are until life gives us an opportunity to see our strength and our power. That's what challenges are for. So when I say I'm grateful for that period of my life, it's not that, oh, I wish I could go back there. Hell no. No, I don't want to go back there. That's not what's happening. So I'm grateful because that was my opportunity to see, to learn about myself, to learn. Because again, when we have a dream, you have to be prepared. And that was a preparation time for me. I needed to see what it means to be a leader. Because if you say you are going to help other people be happy, that means you're going to be a leader some way, somehow. So you starting maybe doing something that people thought was impossible is already you being prepared by life to where you want to go. So sometimes the training is not fun. It's not good. But I promise you, if you're listening, I hope you're not going through a tough time. But if you are, I just want you to know that it's not to break you. That's not the goal. The goal is just for you to really see that you are capable of more than when in normal conditions, you will think there's no way. But when you are put in situations where you have no other options than show up, you will show up. And then after you show up, you will look back and say, huh, look at me.
Look what I did.
It. Yeah. Right. So that's why, yeah, the silver lining is kind of creepy, but I promise you I'm grateful for that moment because I told you I learned that. Impossible, something turns off in my brain like, you watch me. But beyond that, yeah, and beyond that, you know, I know that I'm strong enough. If I can handle 9 months in jail, I know I can handle a lot. So that was a period where I learned a lot about myself, for sure.
When that piece of paper was given to you that you won your case and it unlocked this additional ability that you have to do the impossible, or what other people call impossible, what was like the first thing you did when you got out? Like, what was next for you? Because it could all feel so overwhelming. Like, I fought so hard, and then is my dream out here? Or, you know, like what came next after you,
oh my gosh,
you got your freedom, if you will, again?
Nothing fancy, promise you. No one had the red carpet ready for me outside.
No.
I know, right? The promise.
Oprah wasn't there picking you up?
So bad. She's so bad, I promise. I don't know what she was doing. But yeah, let me just give you a picture. So when they release you, by the time they finish processing all the paperwork and everything, it's probably 10 p.m., they drop me off in front of the gate with my suitcases, and the driver literally said, "Welcome to America," and they closed back the gate. So standing there in the middle of the night, in the middle of nowhere, I had no clue where to go. So luckily, when we were in detention, there were some organizations that were coming to visit. So I called one of the people who were coming to visit, and they came to pick me up. Of course, I had nowhere to go. By the time I spent 9 months there, my hotel reservation was not valid anymore. Okay. So they dropped me off at the shelter. So yeah, that was another fun experience. Again, I couldn't have a proper shower because, yeah, I hope you have never been in a shelter. So let me tell you what it is like in a shelter. It's not fun. So I came out from jail. At least there I could shower for more than 5 minutes. But in a shelter, you have 7 minutes. After 7 minutes, the shower is off. So I couldn't wash my hair or anything. It was not a fun experience whatsoever. So anyway, finally, I was able to, you know, get my credit card, you know, I was able to contact my bank and have it figured out, was able to rent a room. And by the time, you know, I applied for my paperwork, for the work permit and everything else, I got a job, as I was saying, at LAX. Okay. Interesting.
The site of the crime.
Yes. And you know, when you go through something that traumatic, because it was traumatic to be in jail, you feel shame for some reason. It's like you did something wrong, even though you didn't. So I didn't want anyone to know about it. It was so full of shame. I just felt like I was in jail. So what would people think about me if they know I was in jail? So no one should ever know about this, unless if it's not the people who already knew. So applied, you know, got a job at LAX, started working there, had no memory of what had went down there because my brain had shut it down. So I started working there. I was just too excited to have a job. And the reason why I got the job was because it was a French airline. They needed French speakers because, again, my English wasn't that great. So, but they were grateful to have someone who would speak French and some sort of English. So it was perfect for both of us. So I started working there. Didn't remember that I was arrested in that same place. I was happy until I got trained to help assist passengers upon arrival. So I go now, you know, to pick them up from the airport, escort them to the luggage area. And as they're picking up their bags and exiting the airport, it hits me. That's when the memory came back and I remembered that I didn't exit the airport just like a regular passenger. I didn't just pick up my luggage and went out. It didn't work like that. I was handcuffed, put in the back of a bus, sent to jail. So at that moment, my heart started racing and I was saying, okay, I need to follow them and just see what it feels like to exit the airport just like a passenger.
Right.
Let me see what, because as an employee at the airport, we have different routes. You don't need to exit the airport like a passenger. We have different routes. So I said, let me do it and just see, finally feel it. Feel like someone coming to America, what it looks like. So after I helped the last passenger, I followed them. And then I arrived at the exit. I saw all those happy faces, you know, with flowers, with signs, waving at their loved ones. And I had tears in my eyes just thinking, oh my gosh, no one was happy to see me here when I came.
Yeah.
You know, nobody was waving and welcoming me like this. So yeah, that was an intense moment. So I had to recollect myself before going back to the office because, again, no one knew. So,
did you feel that helped kind of close a little bit of the door or a little bit of anything in your the way you grieve those moments or think about those moments? Was that a way to put a button in it or something like that? Or did it not help at all?
It was a starting point.
Okay.
It was a starting point. It was a process. The healing was a process. So that was definitely a starting point because, as I said, I didn't want to look back at it. But again, that was the first step into facing it, right?
And yeah, because you can't erase it. And it's certainly formed who you are now. Mm-hmm. I mean, as much as we don't want to say it, It does. I mean, I think it just creates so many more layers for you. And I can understand how many people probably wouldn't have done what you did and walked through those doors, because it could bring back, or it could bring up, a flood of emotions of like, this is what it could have been, or this is what it should have been, you know, and that can create a whole other storm of stuff. And it sounded like the healing journey came after that. But, you know, good on you for actually taking those steps, because I think it would be really hard for someone to revisit the way things should have gone, mm-hmm. right? And I think that we kind of get wrapped up in that. I don't know. I mean, it's just fascinating to me that this little girl looking around at people on the street, wondering how they felt, you had to go through all of this so that you could somehow change the lives of others around you that were in a situation that you never could have imagined for yourself. You know, yes. Like, it's just like, it's crazy that those people in those detention center, you should have never met, right? If we look on paper, you should never have met those, mm-hmm. but you probably changed so many of the perspectives of those people's lives just in that less than a year time period. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about in that way.
Yeah, life is really mysterious. And things work exactly the way they should, because I could have had a job anywhere else.
And not at LAX. Yeah.
Not at LAX, right? And joke on me, was at LAX. But again, if it wasn't at LAX, I would have maybe I would have not been able to start that process of just experiencing that, right? So I believe, as you were talking about, you know, that little girl and what I had to go through to give myself, to give my dream or my vision a chance, the things that I had to experience, I'm grateful for each one of them, because it's preparation time. To make your, I think that's just my belief, right? We are here for something. Each one of us has something to accomplish for humanity. We are in this together, whether we think it's up to someone else to make things better for others. We are in this together. So we all have an assignment that will benefit the collective. So my assignment is probably to help people feel good and feel happy, right? Whatever that is, maybe by hearing my story, being empowered and encouraged to show up for yourself and just believe that you have what it takes, maybe. But in that, when you have that assignment, you need preparation. And I needed all those moments. So I have the ability to empathize more with people, and I can understand things differently or can see things in a different way. And I can legit tell someone maybe going through a tough time, I promise you have what it takes.
You can do it. Yeah.
Because I can look back. Exactly. So I needed that preparation to be able to help people be happier. Maybe someone might be desperate or hopeless, and I will be able to tell them, coming from a place of lived experience, tell them, I promise you, there is a way out of this. And a fun story. How did I, speaking of closing doors, I told you how I was not interested in talking about this. I didn't want anyone to know.
Right.
So my job at LAX was a great experience, great job. My story of in entrepreneurship is not the story of I hate my job, I hate my boss, I'm kidding. No. It was a great job, great opportunity. Actually, after in less than a year, I became a manager within the company, which was, you know, another, never happened before. The HR told me, listen, I'm in 20 years, I've never seen that. So meaning it was a great experience. I was really on the path to making a career for myself, to say the least. But again, I knew I wasn't here for that. It's just one of these things where at some point I just felt it's time for me to leave and actually start helping people. And I started with coaching. And when I knew I had to leave, it was, again, a tough decision, because I had no reason to leave. I had a great job. My company loved me. My colleagues loved me. So it made zero sense, again, to just say, okay, bye, I'm going to start a business. And that was ending of 2019. made that difficult decision. The HR didn't want to let me go. So she said, you know what? I'm going to give you 3 months leave of absence. Go set up your business and come back. I said, okay, fine. So I go try to get some clients so that I don't have to go back. January 2020, I'm supposed to either go back or not go back forever. So I send that difficult email to tell HR, thank you for the opportunity, but I'm not coming back. So I have no client at that time. So it makes zero sense. But I just know deep down in my heart that that's the right thing to do. Makes zero sense. My brain is freaking out, okay? It's asking me what is wrong with
you. Your logical brain is, exactly. is freaking out, but your heart is like, no, this is the right
way to go. I know what I need to do right now. And my brain is reminding me all the things that don't add up. You are here by yourself. What if you can't pay your rent anymore? Listen, because it's not like, oh, I started a business, didn't work out, I went back to my mom's basement. I have no mom's basement here, okay? So my brain is freaking out. Like, what are you doing? Sometimes the universe is there to encourage us that we are on the right path. That same week, I landed my first coaching client. But I decided to promote my coaching business through speaking and getting on podcast. So I'm on podcast, I'm getting interviewed and everything, and I never talk about this story, okay? When I go on podcast, I share all the things that I have learned about the mind and the mindset, because I was taking a program with Bob Proctor, I was doing a lot of things with Mary Morrissey, Tony Robbins. So I had a lot of material to tell people what to do to, improve. And one day I'm on a podcast, April or May 2020. If you know, if remember anything about that period, okay, you know we are getting our feet wet with the pandemic. People are already freaking out with their jobs. Big companies are struggling. Everybody's afraid. People are sick. People are dying. It's a difficult time for everybody. So everybody is scared and anxious. What's happening? What's going to happen? And I'm on that podcast having a conversation with the host, just like I'm having one with you right now. And I found myself telling that story. I was the first surprised it was happening.
Right.
I was I was the first person to wonder what was happening. But I was already telling the story. I couldn't stop in the middle of the interview. So I told the story. And that was another defining moment. For one, because I realized that I was ready to share the story. And also,
there's power.
Yes. And also that it was the time, the perfect time to share that story, because people were scared. And my story was a perfect reminder that, yes, this sucks. Yes, this is, nobody saw this coming. Just like I didn't see me getting in jail with a visa. I didn't see all of that, but I figured it out. So you have what it takes. You can figure it out. We will all figure this out. So I used that story to encourage people during that time. That, yes, this is scary, yes, this sucks, yes, this hurts, but we have what it takes to see it through. And that was the beginning of me sharing that story everywhere, because I heard the feedback and I saw the impact that it was having. And then I saw that, oh, this is actually a way where I can help complete strangers. Yes, I was going on podcasts to try to get clients for my business, but even the people who were not becoming clients, I could still impact them some way, somehow. And that's why I love podcasts so much, because you never know who is going to listen and when they were going to listen. Maybe they will listen at the perfect time where they need to hear it.
Exactly. There's such power in storytelling. And I think there's power in telling it ourselves, that it kind of frees things up. It puts new ideas into the world, even if we've told our story one way, the same, and someone else hears it or says something about it, and then it gives us a new perspective on it. But I bet too, for business, for an entrepreneur, telling your story helps people connect with you more. They connect with the human. They understand your challenges. Now you're not just a coach giving the 5 tips to do X, Y, and Z. No, now you're sharing your lived experience. These are the things, and here's how these things relate. So I can see there's just such value in it. I'm glad that you share your story, because I've seen the impact of people sharing their stories. And like you said, someone's just listening at the right time, right place in their life where that makes an impact. So thank you for that. I mean, I think thank you for sharing it here and for just like proving that I would probably not make it through, even though you've told me that we are all strong enough to do it. I just feel like, and it's the same thing. I think we all kind of think that way until we're challenged and then we make it through. And so I'm just so grateful that you wanted to share this story. I kind of like to wrap these up with a question, and I'm kind of like, who do I ask? So if you could go back to the version of you that was being stopped right there with your luggage in immigration, knowing what you know now and knowing the experience now, is there anything that you would say to that version of you about the next 9 months?
I will remind her what a complete stranger told me that day. So when the guy had made a decision that I'm a prostitute, I need to go back to Cameroon, he called two female officers to perform the body search on me, removed my shoelaces from my tennis shoes, and sat me on a bench waiting to be processed. As I was sitting there, desperate, completely lost and confused, wondering what was happening, another immigration officer was passing by, and he stopped. If you know anything about LAX, it's crowded. So I don't know how he noticed me, but he did. He stopped and he asked me, "What's happening, sister?" And I don't know what I was telling him because, again, I wasn't speaking English like that. But I started talking. And he stood there, listening. Whatever I was saying, maybe I was mixing French with my language and some English in between. But he stood there and listened to me. And whatever I said, at the end, he just told me, "It's going to be all right." And that simple sentence, I never forgot it. So if I had to say something to that me sitting on that bench, I would say the exact same thing that officer told me. It's going to be all right. And I want to say the same thing to whoever is listening to this show, which, by the way, I want to take a moment to appreciate you for allowing these stories to be shared. Because beyond, as you were talking about, beyond expertise, we are humans. And it's humans who transform because we understand each other. That's how we can help each other, even with our skills, with our services, with our products. The only way we can truly help people is because we understand them. So if someone is listening to this show, I don't know if you're about to give up or you're going through a tough time or you just need encouragement, I just want you to hear this. It's going to be all right. Doesn't matter what it looks like right now or what it feels like right now. It's going to be all right.
No, your story really shares how you will find the strength to make it through the things that you never even could have imagined as part of your journey. Like, there's probably a very tiny, tiny, tiny little piece in you that could have ever imagined what you experienced. And you did it and you moved through it and you changed lives doing it. You changed your own life and now you're helping other people share their stories. So thank you for what you put into the world with your story and your company and all that stuff. It's just, I don't know, I you're right. It's just, you can't understand people until you hear where they've been, what they've done, what they've overcome, what they haven't overcome. You know, all these pieces make us who we are and help us connect with each other and help each other. So thank you for that. If people want to like get in your circle, understand you, talk to you, share a story that your story inspired them to share with you, how can they connect with you? What's like the best way to get in your orbit?
Yes, I know social media is a big deal. So wherever you are on social media, I am there with the same name, Christelle Biga, everywhere. That's C-H-R-I-S-T-E-L-L-E, last name B-I-I-G-A. Just go there, shoot me a DM, tell me, "Hey, I heard your conversation with Matt and I felt encouraged," or whatever your feedback is. I would love, love, love to hear that. And if you are interested in also, you know, getting on shows and sharing your story and making a difference in the world and just helping people be happier, reach out to me on my website, exposuremaven.com, and I'll be happy, happy, happy to support you. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll definitely put those links so that people listening can easily click on them and get to you and talk to you and get in your circle. I appreciate you. Thank you for sharing this story. You know, it's funny because I only asked for a little bit. You gave me some voice memos and told me a little bit about your story, but I hung on to certain parts that we didn't even dive down to. And it's so, I love these conversations because I really feel that more of us need to have more of these and just have genuine, curious conversations, whether they're recorded or not. So thank you for being part of the Life Shift podcast and being part of this family now. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you. I appreciate those of you listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you think you know someone that might need to hear it, need a little inspiration, send it to them. Word of mouth is the best way to help me, indie podcaster, get a little bit more exposure. But subscribe, like, rate, all those fun things. And I will be back next week with a brand new episode of the Life Shift podcast. Thanks again. For more information, please visit www.thelifeshiftpodcast.com.